Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
Hey, Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Thanks, David. Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray at rte.ie. Loads of blue flags around the country. We are gifted and blessed with amazing beaches in this country. But there's a thing going to happen. It's coming down the tracks and people could have predicted it because it looks like now sometime in July or August, they're going to have this vaccination electronic passport thing arranged for Europe and we will be able to leave the country and we will be able to go to places that are guaranteed sunshine. And yet we've been asked to put on the green jersey and stay at home and support an industry that has had a really tough 15 months or thereabouts of it. So what do you do? What do you do? And then, of course, there's the big question mark over value for money. It's a tough one. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the answer is because there are people out there listening now who have booked staycations. Yeah. And every time you hear me say that word, well, you know that I'd prefer to use a different word, but I don't have one. So holidaying at home. So there are people who have booked, because we know that, because we've heard reports of places all over the country been booked out, no availability till September. And now there's the prospect of being able to travel to sunnier climes. What's going to happen? Are you going to stay at home? Are you going to cancel that booking? Or what are you going to do? That's the big question. And there is no doubt, there is no doubt whatsoever that the hospitality industry in this country needs every little bit of help that it can get. So there's our conundrum for today. Answers on postcards, please, to the Ray Darcy Show, RT, Donnybrook, Dublin 4. It's a once-in-a-lifetime conundrum as well. We talked 2 years ago about the e-scooters, and at the time I got one for a loan. Give me a lend of your e-scooter. And I used it for a couple of days. And at the end of it, I was able to tell you that it could go 30 kilometres an hour. Didn't feel quite safe on it. If the battery went, it was a tough old push to get it from A to B. And the other thing, and I think it was Connor Pope noticed this at the time, that a lot of people who use e-scooters, back in the day anyway, they weren't wearing high visibility jackets, they weren't wearing helmets. And this is the thing that hasn't been mentioned in the report today, where they've looked at the various injuries between 2019 and 2020 from people or of people on e-scooters, is that when you're on an e-scooter, unlike a bike, there's no movement. So there's nothing to catch the periphery vision of somebody in a car. You know, so if I'm on a bike, the head's gone and the legs are gone. So there's movement there. And our ancestors needed that sort of periphery vision to spot somebody attacking them from the side or to spot a bison that they might be chasing for dinner or whatever. So we have that facility, you see. But the problem with the e-scooter is that you're on it and you're stationary and you're just there. And then if you're wearing all black, you're all but invisible. You're like a black line moving at 30 kilometres an hour through a space and all but invisible. Anyway, back 2 years ago, we were told that there was legislation on the way. We were told there was a report being put together. So nothing has happened so far. So I don't know what it's going to take to some, you know, because we're reading in the papers today about all those horrific injuries to people who have fallen off e-scooters. Now, the numbers aren't huge, but it's only a matter of time as the number of people who have e-scooters grow. So we need legislation on that. It's a vacuum. There's a lot of vacuums in legislation in this country. Did you ever notice that? Anyway, 51551 on ray at rte.ie. Lorna was on about Christy. Christy Moore. We had a lovely hour with Christy yesterday in Studio 8. Listening to Christy yesterday brought me back to 1998, introducing two Kiwi friends with my now hubby at Christy's amazing gig in New Zealand. We missed home and he just filled that void. We were so proud of him that night. Now 20 years married, we still rock to his music with our four kids. He's our national treasure, Lorna Ryan. There's an aura about Christy Moore now. You know, you get it when, you know those type of people. And there's a calmness about him. And when you're in his presence, you sort of just breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth. And you're sort of, Christy, we're here. Sit down there. And he has the guitar and he'll launch into any sort of song in any particular moment to embellish a story. And it was lovely. If you missed it anyway, it's up there to download as a podcast. And a man upstairs called Peter knows Mike Harding, and he was mentioned in dispatches by Christie yesterday as the man who gave him his first gig when he went across the Irish Sea to England. And Mike Harding, a comedian, folk singer and all that sort of thing. Anyway, Peter knows him, and he got a text or an email or some sort of correspondence from him to inform us that he gave Christie Moore £3 sterling for his first gig when he did it, probably in the late 60s. So he got £3 for his first gig. That's according to Mike Harding, who gave him the gig at the time. So there you go. Just One Voice, isn't it? One Voice is the name of the book. I don't have it in front of me now, but it's an amazing read. And Christie was telling us yesterday that he wrote it 1999. I think it was published in the year 2000 or maybe the end of 1999. And he tells his story, his life story, through his songs. And where he can, he transcribes the lyrics of the songs, and then he tells a little story about that, where he sang it, who gave it to him, blah, blah, blah. And it's a lovely way of telling his life story. So it's a memoir to songs. And the brilliant thing about it is, unlike most memoirs, it's not chronological. So you read it, and it's a good, big, hefty book. You read it, but you have to do a bit of work on the chronology. So you have to save little bits and then piece them together. Oh, that was 1967. That's 1972. What happened there in 1968? All that sort of thing. And he brings you to all the solo thing and the Planxty thing, recording a Christie Moore album down in Prosperous with the lads, and then forming Planxty as a result of that. And then they gigged for a while, and then solo, and then Moving Hearts, and doing three nights residencies in the Bagot Inn. I think they used to do Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday night. I'm sure people have stories about that from over the years. There's so much we didn't get to talk to him about yesterday. So hopefully he'll come into us again in a year's time or 2 years' time, and we'll finish our conversation. Now, also to ray@rte.ie, ray@rte.ie. Yeah, Eldon Connor has been on. Eldon, now there's a name I'm not familiar with. Eldon, E-L-D-O-N. Eldon here, writing from lovely San Anselmo. Not familiar with that either, in California. Originally from Santry. Yeah, I know Santry. But been here for 20 years. Love the place. Just so you know, there is light at the end of the COVID tunnel, says Eldon. Been able to have pints and food indoors for the last month or so, and it feels great. Hopefully you guys will be doing the same in a few weeks. Then I can take a trip back home. But I'm not here to gloat. Just want to wish my amazing mum, Rita Connor, a big 75th birthday today. She's truly one in a million, raised 7 awesome kids, and put up with my hilarious coconut father? Eldon. That's Eldon Senior, also known as Nebo or Nebo, N-E-B-O, for the last 50 years. A total saint in my books is my mother. She and half my family got COVID a few months ago, were pretty sick for a while, but all good now. Although my Aunt Mary has been in hospital for the last 3 months, she's not been doing quite so well, but fingers crossed she will get out of Bowman very soon, and we wish her well. Anyway, could you give a shout out to all the gang, Niamh, Sinead, Claudia, Laura, Darren, Sid, Jonathan, Mary, Ray, Nebo or Nebo, and the birthday girl herself, Rita, or Rio as we call her. Oh, and my wonderful girlfriend Sarah, and keep up the amazing work there on RT Radio 1. And could you play Donna Summer's I Feel Love? Maybe not today, but someday when it seems appropriate, I'll dig that out and maybe play the full 12-inch version, which is about 8 or 9 minutes long. Anyway, Eldon, thanks for getting in contact to ray@rte.ie. You know, up the road, Eldon, you probably know this already, but up the road there, up in Northern Ireland, you can have a pint indoors and a sandwich or a burger. I saw a picture of a lady there hoofing into a big burger in one of the papers today, cheese dripping down off it. Can you please wish cousins Kerry Rothwell in Drogheda and Richard Mooney in Australia a very happy birthday? Love from all the family. Thanks, Don. And we've great beaches. However, there are no toilet facilities, bins which are too small, and no designated parking areas or parking areas which are too small, says Dave and Carlo. Dave, I'm thinking about 3 beaches that I'd be familiar with. Bannistrand. They have loos there. Finnish, across the way, they have loos there. Dunmore East, the Strand, they have loos there. There's a lot of beaches in around the country have loos. Now, if you're going down into a lovely little secluded cove and you want the beach to yourself, well, you have to compromise. So you get that, but you don't get the loo. And of course, you know, you can do it in the sea. It's the Atlantic Ocean. Stoliday is my suggestion as an alternative to staycation. We aren't American. We don't refer to holidays as vacations, no. Or shops as stores, you're right. It's not all about holidays in Europe. Some of us have an adult child in Australia and he or she is not allowed to travel here and we're not allowed to travel there. So there. I saw a guy on an e-scooter on the Red Cow interchange at 7:30 p.m. yesterday evening. High risk or what? Yeah. Was he wearing a high-vis jacket as he took on that high-risk activity? People can travel to sunnier climes once fully vaccinated. People who got AstraZeneca won't get the second shot until much later in the year. Restricts travel for a large portion of the population, says Bernie. How about a holiday? Valerie, we've had this conversation so many times. Holiday. Thanks for that. Stoliday, holiday, holiday inn. Sounds like the beginning of a rap there from the 1970s. Same applies to kids on those electric bikes. Death traps, no regard for road or people's safety, just as bad as mopeds. They should require a license to use, Stuart. That's another thing that's coming down the tracks, Stuart, isn't it? The electric bikes, they can go particularly fast. And then the scooters, they've been used by, yeah, teenagers. And I saw two teenagers on a scooter recently and it just looked very unsafe. The use of scooters on footpaths, especially with speed by children, is terrifying. We see it in Dunleary all the time. I heard reference to the legislation on Radio 1, but nothing about not driving on paths. Well, I'm sure that'll be part of the legislation if and when it's introduced. Adults too are using their scooters with headsets on. Oblivious to the surrounding traffic, weaving in and out. The police cannot do anything and are awaiting legislation. Well, 2 years ago when we were talking about it, they did confiscate a number of scooters, but obviously then somebody told them from above to sort of turn a blind eye. It's a void. And when there's a void in the law, I don't know what you do. Do you? I don't know. Because they are, what do they call it? They're like there's an engine, so they're motorised transport. And in that respect, there is law governing or legislating for motorised transport. So we'll see what happens anyway. 51551 Ray at RT.ie. Now, a bit of Christie. Do you want a bit of Moving Hearts? A bit of Planxty? A bit of Solo? Moving Hearts, I hear. Moving Hearts. Okay, Moving Hearts, right. 51551 Ray at RT.ie. Good afternoon. Moving Hearts from 1981. That'd be 40 years ago. And Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Russian roulette. There was a great energy about that band. I remember seeing them in the Hotel Cadeen in Newbridge. It was raucous and loud and Irish and all that stuff. Ulton Mackin here from Ughtararrt. How are you doing, Ulton? Enjoyed Christie yesterday. I saw him many times in concert, but the highlight for me was his performance at the Royal Albert Hall in London with accompaniment by Donal Lunny. There, that's Ulton's memory. And on beaches, we found the most beautiful little beach in County Kerry last summer. Tiny, secluded, off the beaten track, and a fantastic toilet facility. I'm withholding the name of the beach. Addy, that's not fair. Keeping it to myself for totally selfish reasons. That's Maeve in the West. Share the joy, Maeve. Come on. I'm a driver, cyclist and pedestrian, and those e-scooters drive me crazy. They are super dangerous, says that person. And the worst I've seen was a guy in an electric skateboard weaving in and out of traffic going down the hill on Whitechurch Road. My heart was in my mouth, says Elaine Ratfarnham. And back to beaches, Paddy says, from Donegal, and we have a fair few blue flag beaches. Port Salon, I remembered, was voted one of the top five beaches in the world back in the day. Most have portaloos, but there's seldom a shower or even a simple tap to rinse sand off children or wetsuits, etc. Same is standard on most European beaches. Surely this wouldn't break the bank for local authorities to provide same. Thanks. Was there not talk of investing money in that sort of thing? Yeah, there was. There was an item on the 6 o'clock news where they're investing money in showers and all sorts of things at beaches around the country. So, we'll wait and see when that happens. Probably not going to happen for this summer. Now, our quiz of today. Today is the 25th of May. Yeah, 25th of May. And we're looking for two people to answer five questions each on events that happened on this day over the years, centuries, decades. You know yourself. So, prize today. Great prize. It's a two-night family break at the Radisson Blue in Cork with breakfast each morning and dinner on one evening. Take time to reconnect, bring generations together and make new memories this summer. Enjoy a stay in one of the spacious family bedrooms which cater for up to two adults and four children. Whatever the weather, family fun is guaranteed, be it in the spacious gardens or in the indoor swimming pool. While the children are trying out activities and making new friends, parents have the opportunity to relax and rewind. Or even unwind. You can relax and rewind and unwind. Why not enjoy alfresco lunch at the Georgian Ditchley House, or take some time out with an indulgent Elemis treatment at the spa. And during your stay, you can make the most of your location with a visit to the neighbouring Fota Wildlife Park, Blarney Castle, Blackrock Castle, or take in the many cultural attractions in Cork City. For more information, inua.ie. That's I-N-U-A, inua.ie. So, if you want to win that prize, we're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock, answer five questions each. But first, you have to answer our qualifying question. And today's question is, in which Irish county would you find the town of Kells? In which Irish county would you find the town of Kells? 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. You! Now, Maeve has been back on, and I guilted her into sharing the name of the... of the little beach. She says, okay, you broke me down. Cuis y Crum, near Carisaveen. So this is the way Maeve spells it. C-U-I-S-U-I-F-O-D-A-C-H-R-O-M. Fantastic little beach. Maeve, I think there are enough beaches to go around. We've so many around the country, and so many little hidden gems that people know. And a lot of them take a little bit of effort to get to, so the majority of people won't be making that effort. The best night with Christy Moore was 30 years ago in Moyle Park College in Clondalkin. There was a power cut, didn't bother Christy at all. He just continued with candles. Fantastic gig. He's some performer. Really enjoyed your chat yesterday, says Deirdre. So he didn't need the old, PA system. But I remember reading the book that when he started off, a lot of those four clubs in the UK didn't have PA systems. That people would just sit around and then one person would stand up and sing a song, and then somebody else over the other side of the room stand up. So he got used to not using a PA before he had a PA. Thanks for the hearts, Ray. Song came on as I passed the venue where I saw them on their first Irish tour in Feathert, 1981. Is that the Hotel Navy Yosef? It must be Feathered down in Wexford. Yeah, Feathered on Sea down in Wexford. I used to do discos down there. There's a man came up to me and he says, oh yeah, Hotel Navy Yosef. I went to her now and a disco broke out. Which maybe it was just that particular night. I saw Christy in the Royal Albert in July 1987. The first thing he said when he walked on stage was, it's amazing what Paddy can build when he puts his mind to it. That's from Trevor. Always gets the little subtle dig in. Now, after 4 o'clock, Jimmy Blake is coming on. And Jimmy is a plants man. I didn't know the word existed until recently. Huntingbrook Gardens in Wicklow, or even garden, it's just a singular. That's the work of Jimmy Blake. And he used to work in Airfield up near Dundrum, and then he went down to Wicklow and he started his own garden. And it's an amazing garden, hundreds and hundreds of different plants, and he knows them all intimately. Anyway, he's coming on after 4 o'clock. He's willing to answer any questions you might have about the plants in your humble garden. And he's also looking for people who have gardens that they want to show off, because there's a new TV gardening programme starting and they're looking for people. They're looking for the best gardens in Ireland. Anyway, if you have any questions for Jimmy Blake, he knows all there is to know about plants. Get them into us now and we'll put them to him when he's in with us after 4 o'clock. Okay, ray@rte.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or 51551 for your text now. Lovely photographs in loads of the papers today. One on the cover of the Irish Times, then there's one on the Examiner's front page, and then there's one inside the Independent, loads more, of Valentia Lighthouse, which has reopened for visitors for the first time since September. In one of the pictures is Ted Kennedy holding a ladder as the lighthouse gets a lick of paint and a sprucing up. Ted's a former lighthouse keeper himself, having spent 30 years of his life keeping the coastline of Ireland safe, and he's on the line now. How are you doing, Ted?
Not too bad, Ray.
Good to talk to you.
So far, so good.
Yeah, so far, so good, yeah. So it's more than just reopening. There's more to it, is there now?
There is, yeah. It's high-tech, I suppose, would be the best word.
Yeah.
In so far is that there was a group from Cork. They were a Merriam Media company, and they put a lot of eco signs in and so on for children, for... in the line of
so it's interactive now, and it's sort of like an interpretive centre. It's a beautiful location. Of course, most lighthouses are in beautiful locations. How many lighthouses have we got around the coast?
There is 32, but of course there's a lot of buoys as well, markers, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And how many have you worked in over the years?
I worked in, the majority of them, I suppose, to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But when I was a young fella, we went from one lighthouse to another lighthouse every so often when there was a vacancy, you know.
Mm.
But in my, when I got on, appointed to Slinehead in Galway, well, then I was doing them 6 weeks on and a fortnight off.
Okay. And a lot of the lighthouses, you're delivered out in a boat.
By a chopper.
A chopper? Oh, excuse me.
Yes, right. A chopper, yes.
Would most of them would have some place that the chopper can land. You don't have to...
Yeah, they all have helipads on
them. Yes, right, okay. And then, describe to me then the life of a lighthouse keeper. And I know back in the day before they were automatic that you had to take care of the big bulb. But apart from that, like, was it a boring life?
No, it wasn't. In my young days, there was little jobs around, you know, and the old uniform job was a fairly secure job.
Yeah, yes, of course.
So I went into the Irish Lights as a secure career. And then, of course, they looked after me body and soul. Insofar as they would, if I had a sore toe even, they would send the doctor to me or take me to the doctor.
Right.
You know, and they take me to the church on Sunday as well. So,
would they?
Yes, yes.
What, a helicopter come out and collect you and bring you to Mass?
You had headland stations, such as Mizenhead and Galleyhead.
Yeah.
They supplied a minibus to go out on Sunday morning,
take
us to Mass.
Galleyhead's a lovely place, isn't it? Would you have stayed in the lightkeeper's house there?
I did, yes.
Yeah.
I did. I stayed there. But I was kind of a cute Kerry man. I went for to get house allowance. So I built my own house in Dublin, and I got house loan from them. And if you wanted to, you could live on their houses as well, you know.
Ah, right.
Yes. So
You better not tell them what you did. Keep that a secret. Which would be your favourite one, Ted?
I would say the fastness was the time went the fastest in the fastness. You know.
And is that because there was more traffic passing by?
Quite true, yes.
Yeah.
That was one part of it. And then, you had a complete view around as well. You weren't.
That's spectacular there, isn't it? How far is that from land?
It's 3 miles from Cape Clear.
Right, okay. Is it the most southerly? It's the most southerly point in Ireland, is it?
It would be the last. It was called the Teardrop when they were going to America. The last light they saw from Ireland.
Right. So a lot of people would have very emotional memories attached to Fastnet.
That's right.
And how long were you on Fastnet?
I spent a total of 6 years.
Right.
And on there. With my month on duty and my month off duty.
And how did that affect family life? Were you single at the time?
No. I got married in 71.
Yeah.
So I had to leave my poor wife, even though she was a Dubliner as well. I had to leave her at home, and I hid off for my 4 weeks on duty.
And then when children arrived?
Same thing. Had to be lucky to be home for certain things, you know, confirmations and things like that. But I retired kind of as I knew the job was coming to an end. And I saw an opening for the minibus business. So I retired in 91 and I started the minibus company.
Aha, uh-huh. Right.
You know.
There's that lovely book, I mentioned it, I think, a few weeks ago, Roger O'Reilly. He has done graphic pictures of all the lighthouses around the country. So on one page you get that. They're lovely. You can buy them as posters as well. And then on the other page it gives you the facts and figures about the lighthouse, you know, the height, when it was built, etc. You probably all have all that in your head. Not quite.
It would be hard to keep it all in the head, you know.
So I know that you can get, I always get them mixed up, Malin and Mizen. The one in down south is Mizen, isn't it?
Mizenhead, yeah. Yes.
You can go into that, can't you?
You can. It's an interpreter center as well,
and Valencia. And how many of the others can you go into?
you can go into the galley. And
yes.
Of course, Loophead.
You can stay
well.
In the galley, can't you? I stayed in the galley there a number of years ago.
And Loophead.
Loophead, of course, yes. Yes, yes, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And of course, Wicklow Head.
Yeah, and then you can go into Hook as well. Hook,
that's
is,
right,
Hook
yes.
is lovely, yeah.
That's right. There's I would know all the attendants there as well. Merriam up in Wicklow and, you know, the Tweedies in the Hook,
yeah.
You know.
Do you know, you can stay in that, there are two lighthouses in Wicklow, on the roughly, they're about, what, they're a few hundred metres apart, are they?
That's right.
Yeah. I've stayed in the one that's inland a bit.
It's the Trust, yeah.
Yeah, the Trust. And it's a mad thing because the living quarters are up at the top. And if you're going out for a walk, you know, you come down all the steps and then you go, I forgot my hat. You have to go back up.
Yes.
So it's some experience. I'd recommend it to people. And it's something if you're, you know, if you're courting and you want to impress the other half, that staying in one of those or down in Galley, if they're available to you, I would highly recommend them because they're just unusual places to stay, aren't they, Ted?
Oh, they are terrific, yes. They're also in the north of Ireland, St. John's Point.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah.
In
Donegal, is it?
No, St. John's Point.
Oh, I'm thinking of Charles's Point. That's in Donegal, isn't
yes,
it?
Yeah, yes, yeah. And you have Blackhead as well then.
Yeah. Ted, before I let you go, how do you think, you know, because they're amazing structures, aren't they? They're just so amazing. And then they have to be able to hold off all that battering by the various oceans around, you know, the Atlantic Ocean, the Irish Sea and all that. They're amazing places. How do you think it's affected you as a person working in the lighthouses through
your
life?
Well, to be working in the lighthouses, I suppose you need patience.
Yeah.
As well as being, you know, cooperative with your teammate,
yeah.
You know. Because, like, you did your 4 hours on duty and you did 8 hours off duty. And even though you're still in the building when you were on duty for the 28 days. So I think it made me a better person, all right, you know. But then again, I have to say.
No, I think that's, yeah, I think you've put your finger on there with the patience. Because the rest of us are too busy running around. And, of course, when you work in a lighthouse, you can't. You have to, it's sort of, you know, you have to stop.
And yes, that's.
Yeah.
And that happened to follow when he went to the doctor. He said to the doctor, he said, I get a reeling in his head. So the doctor said, and why do you get a reeling in your head? Oh, he said, I'm going around in circles all day, doctor.
that's the plight of a lighthouse keeper. So Valentia Lighthouse reopened and there's new technology in there, interactive and interpretive, and highly recommended from here. And of course, Valentia Island is a lovely visit as well. We were talking about the tetrapod footsteps last week, which are there on the island as well. Ted, great talking to you.
No bother at all,
Ray. Okay, mind yourself. Stay safe.
Take care of yourself.
Bye now. Bye, bye, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, I'll bring you back to Saturday, December 22nd, 1979. 23-year-old Phyllis Murphy disappeared on that day. She'd been doing her Christmas shopping for her family in Newbridge in County Kildare, and she was last seen going to a bus stop to get the bus from Newbridge to Kildare Town, and that was about 6:30 that Saturday evening. Phyllis's body was found on January the 18th, which was 28 days later, in the new year, 1980. 30 miles away, her body was found in a wooded area in the Wicklow Gap. Phyllis's sister, Barbara, joins me now in studio. How are you doing, Barbara?
I'm fine, thank you.
So it's Barbara Turner Nee Murphy, as they say down the country.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. do you think about Phyllis every day?
Oh, we do.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, she's in our thoughts all the time. You know, especially when we get together and we talk about her nearly as if she's there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What sort of woman was she?
Well, she was very, she was quiet in some ways, but still she was full of life. And she loved children.
Yeah.
She always wanted to bring children out in their prams.
Which, and had she talked about having children herself, for example?
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah. She would have definitely had children.
Yeah.
Because
is that something you think about? You know, I suppose as you go through milestones in your own life, you probably go, Phyllis would be this age. What age would she be now? She's still alive.
She'd be coming up to 65 right. now. She'd okay. probably be a granny yeah. and all. It's hard to, because in our minds, she's still 23.
Okay. Where did she work?
She worked in a knitwear factory in, when she disappeared, she was in Newbridge.
Right.
But she had worked in Monastrevin as well.
Right. And what capacity was she? I think was she a four-person? She was in a position of authority, was
no,
she?
No, she was a cutter.
A cutter, right. Yeah. Okay, well, that was a responsible
yeah,
enough
it
job,
was
wasn't it?
Responsible, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah, she loved her job and she loved her friends and she got on so well with all her friends. She was that type of person and she loved looking after people, and she went to Lourdes to look after special needs people. She was just always looking after people, yeah.
Was she a sensible person?
Very sensible. Yeah. We called her Granny. She was so sensible.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And she got a perm that day.
Yes, that was the first time she ever got a perm. So,
and why did she get a perm that particular day?
Because it was coming up to Christmas and it was just coming into fashion.
Right.
And I'd say she was very excited trying to get home to show off the perm.
Yeah. How many was in the family?
There was 10 that right. time, yeah. yeah. We found another brother afterwards, years after.
We'll come to that later
yeah,
on.
Yeah,
you were the eldest.
I was the eldest.
And your mum died when you were 16, so you probably, a bit like Christy Moore yesterday, you took on an awful lot of responsibility,
well,
did you?
Well, I had to take over completely.
Yeah.
But I think my mother had me sort of ready for it. Because she was always delicate and she always had something wrong. I think she knew she wouldn't live to be old.
Okay, right.
So I was always doing things anyway.
I suppose you're thankful that she wasn't around to see what happened to Phyllis.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It would have killed her altogether.
Who was the last person to see Phyllis alive?
I think it was my brother. My brother that's in Australia, because right. She babysat for him the night before.
Yeah.
And on the way home then she called in to him. Then.
Right. Because in the documentary it says that she went to visit...
Oh, she went to visit the Lucas then
the
after
Lucas,
that.
Yes, yeah. So.
Because she was meeting Barbara that night.
Barbara.
Yeah,
right.
For the dance.
Right.
And she just called in to her mother. Barbara wasn't there, but she had a chat with the mother. The mother came out to the gate with her to see her off.
So here was a young woman, 23... got the hair permed, had spent her wages on buying presents for her family.
That's right.
Was looking forward to going to a dance in the CY Hall in Kildare. And she'd gone over across the road. It would have been the main road from Dublin to Cork, Limerick, through Newbridge.
Yes, and it was just across from Cadian Hotel.
Yeah, people know that road. Yes. Yeah. And she was waiting there for the bus, the 6:30 bus, but she never got on it.
She never got on it.
How did you find out that she was missing?
Well, we were at home because we were only after moving into our house and we were doing the central heating. So we weren't out that night and somebody called to just tell us. We hadn't phones or anything that time, but someone called up to say Phyllis never came home. So I didn't take it too serious then, but later on the night when there was still no sign, we knew straight away there was something wrong.
Right. Because it was out of character?
Oh, totally out of character.
And then the next day then, Sergeant Kevin Duran, he would have been the local sergeant, and one of your brothers went up to say that Phyllis was missing.
Yeah. He went up to report her missing, and they put it on the radio then. They used to put missing people. But there was nothing much about it, because it was only a missing person, really.
Okay, yeah.
But on Christmas Day then, we all went, well, not us, but the boys, the men in the family, went out searching.
And, of course, the wide expanse of the Curragh Plains is between Newbridge and Kildare.
That's right, yes.
So that's a big area to search.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
But we were concentrating, I don't know why, but the lads were concentrating around near the chilling factory.
Okay, right.
And it's funny that they did pick on that spot, because afterwards we discovered there was a couple of things found there.
And one of the things found was one of her gloves, and in the glove was the bus fare.
Bus fare.
Right.
Definitely. But that wasn't there Christmas Day.
Right, okay. So they were searching and searching. They found bits and pieces on the Curragh. And, like, it was a huge search. Like, how many people do you reckon were searching at its height?
There was thousands.
Yeah.
I mean, there was busloads even came from Dublin. And I remember Hal Conway came every day
and picked up everybody
to bring them out searching.
Yeah.
And
just for people who wouldn't know, Hal Conway was the local bus operator.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And the civil defence from Monastrevin, they were the first to go out before the guards got in on it at all.
Yeah,
because some of them worked with fellas.
Right.
And they went searching.
Searching and searching.
Yeah.
What was going through your head now at home when all this was going on?
Well, I actually went searching, went to houses and didn't realise that it was 2 o'clock in the morning because time meant nothing. Going with a photograph, asking people around Old Kilcullen and that, because we had been to a diviner.
Right.
And he said Old Kilcullen.
So this is the
type of person. So we thought we were going to find her.
Right, right, okay. So he had said that she was alive.
He said she was alive.
Right, yeah. But you'll grasp at anything, won't you?
Of course.
Yes, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So the searching continued, and for some reason, which I don't know, and you probably don't know the answer either, the Gardaí at the time extended their search into Wicklow.
It was heading towards Wicklow.
Yes, right.
Until they were turned back one morning. And nobody knows who turned them back.
Right.
And they went back to the Curragh. And I think that's when the gloves were found.
Found, right, okay.
So somebody obviously didn't want them going near Wicklow.
Wicklow. But then on the 18th of January, you got the news. And it was sort of bittersweet because, you know, up until that, Phyllis was a missing person.
Yes. It was good, really, because at least we knew.
Right.
And we sort of celebrated in a way. But then it was a big downer then when we realised the consequences and what happened to her.
Yeah.
And it was only afterwards, really afterwards, we realised how bad it was and how many injuries she had and everything that happened to her, you know. But that, I suppose a lot of that didn't get through to us at the inquest.
Isn't that sort of mad that you would, you know, that would be cause for celebration, finding a dead body.
Oh.
But that was the nature of what was going on because so many people were searching. And I suppose in your heads, the goal was to find her.
Well, we wanted to find
her.
I mean, it was very hard going to bed at night in the warm bed, wondering where was she lying in the cold.
Yeah.
And we knew she was lying somewhere in the cold.
And it was a particularly cold winter.
Oh, it was very cold, very frosty altogether.
And that influenced, in, you know, 20 years on, the case, because poor Phyllis's body was preserved in the snow.
That's right, yeah. It was preserved and the DNA was preserved. So it all worked out well.
Yeah. So your brothers informed you that she'd been found and you asked about it and they said she was clothed and it turned out that you heard on the news on RT1 that she'd been found naked and she'd been strangled and she'd been raped and it was horrific.
Yeah.
And I suppose after the initial buzz of her being found, then you have to deal with, you know, what it was like for her in her final moments.
And what really happened to her. Yeah. That was very hard to take.
Mm. Yeah, that's a haunting thing, isn't it?
It is. It's dreadful.
Yeah.
Especially to see it on the paper, see it all in writing. I know that had an awful effect on me when I read it.
Yeah. And I suppose journalists have to report these things.
Of course. Yes, yeah, and yeah. I mean, I'm not saying they shouldn't have reported. It has to be reported.
Yeah.
It's like when my brother tried to tell us she had all her clothes on.
Yes, he was protecting us from the truth.
He was protecting us because...
Yeah. And your dad, your poor dad, that was, you know, he never recovered really from it, did he?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Definitely not. I mean, it's bad enough, you know, when it happens to a sibling, but when it happens to your own child,
okay,
he couldn't handle it at all.
So then ye were chatting among yourselves, you were chatting to the Gardaí, and we've established already that Phyllis was a sensible woman, which led you to believe that she would never get into a car of a stranger.
No, so, we knew that.
Yes. So then whoever had done this...
Yes.
Who would perpetrate this horrific murder was known to her.
Well, we were 100% sure of that.
Yeah.
Now there was no doubt in the world that she would never have got in with a stranger. Because she was very fussy about that.
Mm.
She would never thumb a lift. Because that time people did.
Well, all the time.
All the time, yeah. But she never would. And she always told her friends not to do it.
Yeah.
You know, she even told them, I'll give you the money for the bus, but don't.
Hitch.
Yeah.
So if she knew the person, then you probably knew the person.
Well, we knew that.
Yeah.
And that was scary, really.
Yeah. Now, I'm from Kildare. I was 15 when all this was going on. I was unaware that, you know, the details of it.
I don't know why it was a different world. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Because I suppose she was 8 years older than me, and you know, so wasn't really on my
radar. It goes over your head.
It does at 15.
Anyway.
Yes. Well, a good thing that it does. I suppose.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
So the Gardaí then go about questioning, and they questioned every man of a certain age with a car.
They did. Yeah, they were very thorough.
And I saw they took 50 blood samples.
That's right. Yeah. That's the 50 that they kept. Yes.
They kept. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they came up with nothing.
No.
How did you feel about that?
Well, we understood because at that time, back then, the samples, blood samples, could only eliminate somebody.
Right.
So there was a lot more samples, I'd say, but they got eliminated.
Aha. Right. Okay. So they knew from the semen sample that the person had a certain blood type, probably.
That's it.
And then they could eliminate.
Yeah, and they had to wait until
1998.
To get a DNA, you know, for the advancement there.
Through all of those years, nearly 20 years, like that must have been horrific. Like, for example, if you were in the local pub or shop or whatever, looking around and a man came in, did it cross your mind that he's the man who could have killed my sister? Not really,
because the way we felt, we didn't honestly think, even though we knew it had to be someone we knew, but we couldn't visualise someone that we knew that could be a murderer.
Okay.
You just couldn't think that
right,
way.
Yes, okay, right.
You know.
Probably for you to maintain your sanity.
Oh, well, of course, but I suppose the fact that we had her and we found her and we knew where she was. If she'd still been missing, that's horrific.
Well, I'm thinking about people that we've spoke to, the Dealies and the Jacobs and the Dallards.
That's hell.
Yeah, yeah.
It's bad as it is with us. At least we know where she is.
Yeah. And speaking of Deirdre Jacob, as a result of her going missing then, they set up Operation Trace. And Phyllis's case was sort of put into that, so it was never closed, but there was renewed interest in it.
Yeah, it was never really closed, and we made sure it wasn't, because any chance we got, we gave interviews and we kept it going so they wouldn't forget. We were afraid to forget about it.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I know that wasn't the case, because I know for a fact her photograph was... To the very end, it was in Naas Garda Station.
Always
they
there.
Never forgot about her.
Yeah. And Finbar MacPaul, there's a man.
Oh, gosh.
So he kept the samples both from Phyllis's body and from the 50 people who'd given blood. And he had them locked away in a filing cabinet in the Garda station in Kildare.
Oh, he really looked after them with his life.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah, and they could so easily have gone missing, couldn't they?
Oh, very easily.
Because I'd say in the meantime, the Garda station moved, didn't it?
They did, yeah. But he made sure.
Right.
He was a fantastic man.
And then there was a man called McArdle who would have been in Naas Garda station at the time
Brendan
of Phyllis's disappearance.
Yeah.
And he was now working up in HQ. And he was aware that the new DNA testing may have been an opportunity to shed more light on Phyllis's case.
And he went to England himself. He wouldn't even send him off.
Right, he went. Right.
He brought him in on his person.
Okay. So then, because of all of that, John Crear's name came up. What did you feel when you heard his name?
Well, we didn't know him. He wouldn't have been a personal friend of mine that. But we knew him, and, well, at least we had a name then
and that we could. Had Phyllis babysat for him?
She had, yeah. A couple of my sisters had babysat, yeah, because they were friends of some of the family.
Yeah.
You know, there were, I mean, you know and yourself, Kildare was small and everyone knew each other.
There was only, around then, there was probably 5,000 people max.
Yeah,
and everybody knew everybody.
Different times.
I'm just wondering, over those 20 years, had you been in his company that you know of?
No.
Right.
Probably would have maybe seen him, but no way.
Yeah. So he was arrested in 1999, charged with Phyllis's murder. And then went to court in the early 2000s.
2002, yeah.
Yeah. And you were there every day.
We were, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, bus came for us every day, every morning to pick us up and brought us. And, well, it was upsetting at times. Mm. We didn't stay for Dr. Harbinson's report. We didn't want to hear all that. We left at that time. But every other day we were there and we were uptight, you know, waiting and waiting. It was nearly 3 weeks. It was a long time.
Because he denied everything and it wasn't a given that he was going to be found guilty.
No, it wasn't. So, I mean, we didn't know till the very last day.
Mm.
Even though we had a feeling, you know, that it was going to work out well. But you never know. You never know till the end.
And is that a cause for celebration? Or how do you feel 20 years after you've lost your sister, your lovely sister, and eventually somebody has been held responsible for it, been found guilty of the murder?
Well, it's good for to get someone, because they can't do it to anyone else then.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's great, really.
What was the atmosphere like in the courtroom?
Oh, it was amazing. An awful lot of crying from everyone, guards, detectives, the bus driver, everybody.
Right.
It was very emotional altogether because a lot of the older guards that were retired and that came back for the verdict and that.
Okay.
You know, it was very good.
I have one more question I want to ask you,
that's all,
Barbara, but I have to take a quick commercial break. So
okay.
I just stay with me on that and we'll talk to you a little bit more after this. So Barbara Turner is with us. We're talking about her sister Phyllis Murphy, who was murdered by John Crear back in 1979, and he wasn't convicted of her murder until 2002. Found guilty, but probably due for release sometime soon, Barbara.
I really haven't heard anything, but I'm sure he must be nearly due to be released. I mean, he's, going on 19 years in jail now, so.
Yeah.
I don't think too much about that part.
No. Do you know what I was thinking? Because it's a part of a documentary, and you're featured in the documentary tomorrow night on TG Car, Morrow in Our Mask, which is Murder in Our Midst, which probably says it all, really. So it's on tomorrow night on TG Car. I was thinking about his family. And, you know.
There's no winners in a case like that.
No.
I mean, they have to live with it, you know, as well. And.
Yeah, very sad, isn't it?
It's a sad situation all over, you know.
There's a monument to her up and the Sally Gap where she, her body was found. And is there a bench somewhere for her? Did I see?
No? Yeah, down St. Bridget's Well.
Ah, lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Patrick got that specially made. Ah. And
it's lovely down there.
Because we loved St. Bridget's Well, as you know.
Yeah.
That was our seaside.
As I used to say about in Kildare Town, even the fish didn't need to know to swim. There was so little water. So that's lovely. That's lovely. And she's, and there's a lovely scene where Finbar MacPaul, the man who kept those vital samples, is up visiting the memorial up in Sally Gap.
Yeah, because he goes up there all the time.
Yeah.
He's so good. Mm. He goes up and he brings flowers and he's amazing.
Yeah.
All the guards, I have to say, are amazing. And they looked after us so well during the trial and everything. They were great.
And people will see tomorrow night, we mentioned Kevin Duran earlier on, and there's sort of like nearly, it's a twist that would be in a drama, isn't it? I'll let them tune in to see that.
Yeah.
Okay. Barbara, thanks so much for coming up from Kildare.
You're very welcome. Yeah.
Grimorga, Ciarán, thank you very much. 51551 ray@rte.ie. They're still coming in about Christy Moore there. My memory of Christy, he was my young son's favourite singer. Christy was singing his book. Sorry, not singing his book. He was signing his book. Although you could sing it because all his favourite songs are in it. He was signing his book in Kenny's of Galway. My husband had just had a serious heart attack, and while he was resting I ran into town to get the book for his upcoming birthday. When I got there I saw my son at the top of the queue. He had bumped off school. He was caught red handed. Christy was amazing. We had some lovely photos taken that day. Husband recovered and is still a very healthy man. So they all lived happily ever after, and still fans of Christy Moore. I'm originally from Kildare and lived near the Murphy family. If you travelled from Derry to Kerry you wouldn't meet a nicer family. There you go. And what isn't said, and I found it hard to find out about this, because there was another woman killed in Kildare town in the early 70s. She'd worked in the local cinema. So that was two murders in a small town in the matter of 5 years or whatever. And it obviously had an effect on the people of the town, particularly the women, I would imagine. 51551 ray@rte.ie. It's time for this, yes? Yes, it's time for our quiz of today. Today, the 25th of May. 10 questions on the way from events that happened on this day over the years. And a prize. And it's a two-night family break at the Radisson Blue, Cork. Loads of things to do and see. And it's a family break. So it's a family bedroom. Two adults and four children will be catered for. And loads of things to do. There's the gardens, the swimming pool. And of course, you're perfectly positioned to explore everything Cork City and its environs has to offer. Iknewa.ie if you want to find out more about the Radisson Blue in Cork. And we say hello to Emily Hardiman. How are you doing, Emily?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good. You're in Rathcullaheen.
Rathcullaheen, that's right, Ray. Yeah, you pronounced it right there.
Where in the world is Rathcullaheen?
It's in County Kilkenny, about 20 minutes from the city.
Right. North, south, east or west?
South.
South. So you're on the way to Waterford there?
Yes, you could say that. You could do a detour.
Are you near Mullinavat?
No, about half an hour.
From Mullinavat. Okay, I'm just trying to get where you are. Are you near Stonyford?
Same, about half an hour. We'd be about 15 minutes or so in the car, maybe 20 from Waterford.
Okay, so you're south Kilkenny.
Exactly.
Right, okay. What are you up to today?
I'm finished work today, Ray. I was working earlier. I'm gone from full-time to 3 or maybe 4 mornings. I'm an SNA in a secondary school. So we're finished this week, thank God.
Oh, yes.
The break.
For the summers? For the whole summer?
Yes, I have one in secondary school and one in primary. So my primary school, she's not finished until obviously the end of June, and yes. I have one finish now this week, so
yeah, okay.
It's kind of a split divide in the house.
And any plans for the summer? Will you be having holidays in Ireland, or are you going abroad, or what are you doing?
Not abroad, unfortunately. The only plan we have is my on my husband's side, his sister is getting married in July, and they're due now, they've cancelled twice,
right.
And now they're doing a marquee and caterers at the house. So looking forward to that little breakdown.
And what do they know how many people they'll be allowed at that stage, or hasn't been decided yet, has
it? Well, it's probably going to be a bit more than now. That's why they cancelled. They thought it would only be six. They cancelled the hotel.
Yeah.
But look, they're still kind of glad they did because...
Okay. Right.
It's working out good. I suppose they're saving money, aren't they?
Well, they are. Yeah, we wish them well. Now, you're up against Mary O'Shea from Kilkenny City. It's all Kilkenny today.
Up the cats.
How are you doing, Mary?
I'm good, Ray.
Now, Mary, I've just been told that you are page 103 of A Page for My Life.
Yes.
It was the summer of 82 and all my friends were talking about...
Don't stop. That took me all of 20 minutes to write, Ray.
Go on. Well, you're very good. I better finish the sentence for them. It's called The Snail, right? All they need to know is The Snail and the first sentence, and then they can fill in the gaps. Is that fair enough?
That's fair enough.
It was the summer of 82 and all my friends were talking about French kissing. And it's called The Snail, right? It should be on the Leaving Cert curriculum. No, okay, there you go. Page 103. You're in Kells in Kilkenny.
No, Kells. I just said the qualifying question was Kells.
Yes.
There's a Kells in Kilkenny.
There is. Sorry, you're right. Yes, there is. And what are you up to today?
Well, I'm finished work. I work mornings. I do 9 to 1.
Yeah.
I'm an administrator with the organisation alone.
The
best part of my job is the friendly calls, right?
Yeah.
And it's been a tough year on the old people out there. The government hasn't a clue what they've put them through.
It's been a very tough year. Yeah, very
it's
tough.
It's been
year.
An awful bad year for them.
Yeah. And you're there, you're at the coalface, Mary.
Yeah, but I enjoy it. They're brilliant, them people. I get a history lesson every day I go to work.
Yeah.
I do, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And the best advice in the world, because they've lived through everything.
And they just want to hear a friendly voice at the end of the phone.
A friendly voice. They mightn't speak to anyone all day, some people like.
Mm.
You know, and it's nice to pick up the phone and chat for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And you know.
I know we talked about an awful lot about it when we were going through it, but like that cocooning and not being allowed outside your house, that was horrific.
Horrific.
Yeah.
Not getting to see family and friends. Grandkids was the big thing.
Yes.
With a lot of them.
Yeah.
The grandkids was a big thing because all grandparents love their grandchildren.
Of course they do, yeah.
You know?
You're cooking traditional pigs bone cabbage and potatoes, as my granny used to call it.
It could have been rain, and we've had such bad weather, like, you know, with bacon and cabbage weather.
Yes, it is, you're right. Yeah, that's a winter dinner, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Although the forecast for the weekend is very good.
Yes, barbecue Sunday, please God.
All right, okay, that's something to look forward to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, right, 5 questions each. Emily and Mary, both in County Kilkenny, whoever
best
answers
more. Good luck, Emily.
Emily, you can say good luck to Mary there.
Good luck, Mary.
Yeah. So 5 questions, Emily, whoever answers most correct gets the prize. If it's a draw, we go to a tie-break situation. Here we go. Right, Emily. Your question is this. On this day in 1973, Hector Campora was installed as president of Argentina. On what continent would you find Argentina?
South America.
Correct answer. On this day in 2014, Petro Poroshenko was elected president of Ukraine. Mary, on what continent would you find Ukraine?
Europe.
Correct answer. Emily, your second question is an audio one. Have a listen to this.
You're jealous.
I am not.
On this day in 1944, Frank Oz, American puppeteer, was born in Hereford in England. He voiced the part of that character in The Muppets for many years. Can you name her?
He has to be, is it, guys?
Who?
Miss Piggy.
Yes, Miss Piggy is the correct answer. Well done. Well done, Emily. And for you, Mary, have a listen to this.
Marty, you made it.
Yeah.
Welcome to my latest experiment. This is a big one, the one I've been waiting for all my life.
Well, it's a DeLorean, right?
Share with me, Marty. All your questions will be answered. Roll tape.
Okay,
I will proceed.
On this day in 1951, Bob Gale, American screenwriter, was born in University City, Missouri. He wrote the screenplay for that movie featuring Michael J. Fox. Can you name the movie?
Back to the Future.
That's the correct answer. Right. Question number 3 for you, Emily. On this day in 1946, Jordan gained independence from Great Britain. Which of these is the capital city of Jordan? Amman or Damascus?
Oh, God. A man.
Is the correct answer. Damascus is Syria. And for you, Mary, on this day in 2002, at the 47th Eurovision Song Contest, Mary N won for Latvia, singing I Wanna. Which of these is the capital city of Latvia? Vilnius or Riga?
Oh, it'll have to be, I guess, Riga.
Riga is the correct. Yeah, they all count. It's a guess, but it's the correct guess. Now, it's 3-3, and we move on to question 4. It's a music question for you, Emily. Have a listen to this. Jumpin' Jack Flash was released on this day in 1968. Can you name the band?
Oh, I can sing along to it. Oh, Jumpin' Jack Flash. Oh, the Rolling Stones.
Yes.
Mick Jagger. Yes.
Well done.
Okay. I could see him in front of you.
Doing that silly dance he does. Okay, so it's 4 for you, Emily. Mary, your music question. Have a listen to this. I Want to Dance with Somebody, number one on this day in 1987. Can you name the singer?
Whitney Houston.
Is the correct answer. Yes, well done. Great song. Now it's 4-4, down to the wire. Good luck on this one, Emily. Your final question. Get it right and you put Mary under a bit of pressure. Here it is. Cillian Murphy, Irish actor, was born on this day in Douglas in Cork. But in which year was he born? 1973, 1976, or 1980, Cillian Murphy, star of Peaky Blinders and other things.
Oh, probably 76.
76, you say, which would make him 45 today, is correct.
Yes.
And happy birthday, Cillian Murphy.
Very easy on the eye, Ray.
Yes. So my wife keeps telling me. He's a beautiful man. He's such a beautiful... I know, I heard it the last time you said it. He's such a beautiful man. Such a beautiful man.
Oh, she's doing well herself now, your wife.
No, but the brilliant thing, I've met... Lucky enough to meet Cillian Murphy. He's beautiful on the outside and on the inside.
That's nice to hear.
He's a beautiful man. Gentleman. Okay, so you're on 5, Emily. Mary, under a bit of pressure, get this right and we go to a tie-break situation. Good luck. On this day in 2018, actor Hugh Grant married Swedish television producer Anna Eberstein. In what year was Hugh Grant born? 1960, 1963, or 1966?
1960.
Yeah, there you go, yes.
You're about my age.
Yeah, he'll be 61 in September. So that's 5-5. Well done to you both. Unfortunately, we have to choose a winner. That's the way it works. So we've asked you the tiebreak question before you went on air. And the question is this. On this day in 1903, Ewart Milne, poet, was born in Dublin. According to Google Maps, how long would it take to cycle from the GPO in Dublin to Tullow in County Carlow? So cycling from Tullow to from Dublin to Tullow, answers in hours and minutes. And Emily, your guess was...
4 hours,
you say. And your guess, Mary, was?
4 hours, 50 minutes.
Okay, it's 78 kilometres. And according to Google Maps, on a bike, it would take you 4 hours.
Well done, Emily.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks so much, Mary.
Yeah. Hard luck, Mary.
No problem.
We'll send you out to Ray D'Arcy Show Mug. And it's tough when you answer all the questions correct and it goes to the tiebreak. Sorry about that, Mary.
Yes.
Okay, mind yourself. Stay safe.
Okay.
Bye. Well done, Emily.
Oh, brilliant. I'm delighted that I'm not a cycler.
So there you go. You're off to Cork. And it's a family room, so the kids will love it. And
thrilled,
the swimming pool
absolutely.
And all that. Yeah.
Oh, Ray, thanks so much. And that's when we're going to the wedding. So it might tie in.
There you go. Yes. Yeah, iNUA.ie if you want to find out more about the Radisson Blue in Cork. Enjoy
Wonderful.
It.
Wonderful. Ray, thank you so much.
See
lovely
Emily.
To talk
yeah,
to you.
Nice
Take care.
Nice to talk to you. Bye.
Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 for your text. Now, one activity that boomed during lockdown is gardening. And RTE are getting ready to film a new show called Ireland's Best Garden to try and capture some of the brilliance that happened all over the country as people had time to get out there and make their gardens beautiful. To tell us more, one of the judges and owner and creator of Huntingbrook Garden, Jimmy Blake, is on the line. How are you doing, Jimmy?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good to talk to you. I want to get down to Huntingbrook. I never knew it existed before your name was mentioned last week. It looks amazing.
Yeah, not far out of Dublin, near Blessington.
How many acres?
It's 20 acres, the whole place.
How many plants have you got?
Oh, jeez, I've never counted them, Ray. It's one of the largest collections now in Ireland, private collections anyway. There's a huge amount, like there's about 5 acres up around the house planted, and then there's a valley and meadows. And,
yeah,
it's been my passion all my life.
Like. Yeah, what's the difference between a horticulturist and a plant man?
A plant man.
But that's what you're described. You're described as a plant man, a plants man.
Plant men are usually nutcases. They're, right, you know, yeah. And you meet fellow nutcases all over the world.
So you're an obsessive, are you? You're
absolutely obsessive. You want to see the place at the moment. It's at the glass house about to burst.
And do you have a favourite, Jimmy?
Oh, Jesus. All sorts of plants, right? I mean, I'm very much into trees. I'm big into colour. Colour is a big thing for me.
Yeah.
What is a favourite at the moment? Well, I'm about to do a huge display of dahlias in the garden for the summer for when we're open to the public. So that's a big obsession dahlias. At the moment.
Did you see that plant last week? People travelled from all over America to smell it. It smelt like a dead corpse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's odd,
yeah,
very odd.
Yeah, the big thing, yeah.
So Ireland's best gardens. So you're looking for people, and these are people who haven't had professional help.
Yeah, exactly. Just ordinary people doing really good jobs in their garden. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at 3 gardens each week. And it could be three coastal gardens, it could be 3 city gardens, 3 country gardens. And the three of us, the three of us, we're not called judges now. We're experts. We're not experts. I don't know. We're
people who like gardens
and designers. Yeah. So,
and these can be anything from a small garden in a suburb or to a big country garden or whatever you have.
Absolutely. And I suppose it's we want to have a good level of decent gardening going on in these gardens, and the gardens are going to, they're going to inspire and educate people. I suppose I'm coming more from the plant side of things. That's what I'd be looking for. I'd be looking for that, there's a good selection of plants, there's good combinations, that it's not just looking good on the day when we're there, that you can see that it's going to look good through the year as well.
And that's important, isn't it? So you need to plan that during winter something's happening as well.
Absolutely.
gardening@animotv.ie. What's in it for the gardeners? If they want to show off their garden, firstly, okay.
They want to show off their garden. I mean, it's not a highly judged, we're not going to be really critical on the gardens. We're going to be there kind of to advise them as well, and maybe suggest different things they can do with their garden, different plants, design. Niall Maxwell and Ingrid Swan, they're with me as well on the programme. So they're very strong on the design. So and there will be a winner each week, all right. But we're not doing an overall winner. So
So it's a gentle programme.
It's supposed to be gentle, yeah.
And gardening is a gentle occupation, isn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I've watched a number of your videos, because you did loads of videos during lockdown, and you seem like a very centred person.
Yeah, I mean, I have to work hard at being centred.
But there's been a gardener and been out there all the time. That must help, does it?
Do you know what? It's the power of it during the last year, and I knew this for years, but for me, like, the business just took a belt last a year ago. And what we did was we literally started filming a whole year in the garden here. So we produced these 4 online courses. And it was lovely. I really enjoyed doing it. I suppose it was good practice now for doing the telly.
Yeah. Listen, we said you were coming on, and we know that you're willing to offer advice to our listeners, which is very generous of you. So we fly through these. Try and make your answers as succinct as possible. Succinct and informative, Jimmy, if you can. Okay. Because we've loads to get through. That's the only reason I'm asking you to do that. Mary's been on. I hear you have a gardening expert coming on later. That'd be you, Jimmy. Could you please ask him if he knows where I could buy auricula plants? Is that how you pronounce it? Auricula plants or seeds? Many thanks, Mary.
Yeah, there's a website online called Barnhaven Primulus.
Right.
They sell seed of auriculas, so it's really good to grow them from seed. There's also a nursery up the north of Ireland called Peninsula Primulus. Peninsula Primulus would be good.
Okay, that's 2 options there for Mary. Looking for recommendation for native Irish climbing rose for behind a bench, please.
a native Irish climbing rose.
Yes.
I don't think there is a native actual climbing rose, but just go with one of the kind of more wild roses, you know, a dog rose or something like that.
Okay. That's done. Another Mary, very mature creeping wisteria on house hasn't flowered this year or last year. What could be wrong? It hasn't been pruned.
It hasn't been pruned. Well, one thing is don't feed them. They don't want loads of food. They want plenty of light. And you do need to prune them. There's two times a year in winter and in summer.
Okay.
The best thing is to look that up, because I could tell you now and it'll go out of your head.
Yes, but, yes. That's good advice. Okay, so they need to be pruned and they don't like being fed. Right, I'd love Jimmy's opinion on the best plants, flowers to plant in pots now for a bit of colour during the summer.
I mean, you know, there's so many. I suppose go with bigger plants, I always say. You're putting in small plants in pots so often doesn't really work. Go with big, tall plants, you know, canna lilies, you know, big dahlias, you know, bananas, banana leaf, you know, the red leaf banana. If you put that in a pot with a load of manure that it's, you know, you're really feeding it, it turns into this big monster during the summer.
Right.
And it's spectacular. So the big plants and good
great.
Big pots.
Sounds great, yeah. Bernie and Tip says, could Jimmy answer me why my hydrangea plant, if 10 years old, suddenly stopped flowering last year and this year, and the leaves are dying? Bernie and Tip.
The leaves are dying. It didn't enjoy the year of COVID. do you know what? They don't like being dry. They like to be fed. So you could put some manure around the base of it. They don't like being dry. And we did have a few dry weeks before this.
Yes, we did. April was very dry, actually.
So food, manure, and make sure it has enough water.
Okay. Rose has been on your gardening queries. Could I ask what are the best plants to plant around a decking area in the middle of a lawn? Have one daughter terrified of bugs, etc. So need plants that won't attract too many flies or wasps.
Well, I'm looking out my window here and I'm looking down on well-behaved bamboos around my deck.
Right, okay.
And they do look nice with a deck.
Right, so bamboos. And there's another question, and we leave you with this one. Final question, and it's on bamboos. I had miniature bamboos planted in a raised wall for the past 4 years, but this year they went all gold colour and unhealthy looking. We took some out and put them in pots and are hoping they'll improve. Have you any advice, Anne?
Yeah, they run out of steam. They're probably they don't have enough food in there. They don't have enough water. They were never going to last forever in that situation.
Okay.
You know, you see them outside restaurants and pots and the poor things are starving and wanting to get out.
Right, so take them out of the pots and plant them in the ground. Is that it?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Right, Jimmy, I'm looking forward to the programme. I'll give them that address again, gardening@animotv.ie, and I'm sure we will chat again. And can't wait to get down to Huntingbrook.
Yeah,
When are you open?
We're open every Wednesday to Saturday now, till the end of the summer, till the end of September.
Brilliant. Okay, thanks, Jimmy.
All right,
good
Ray,
luck. See you. Bye. That's Jimmy Blake there. Huntingbrook Gardens down in Wicklow. And if you put it into Google, you'll find out where they are. That's it from us. Cormac is on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.